The following opinions expressed are those of the host, his guests, and callers. The opinions do not in any way represent those of the staff, management, or sponsors of WebmasterRadio.fm. Listener discretion is advised.
It's time to search for truth. Fight for our freedom. And talk with some common sense. From WebmasterRadio.fm's world headquarters in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, this is the Jerry Abrams Show. Now, here's Jerry Abrams.
Hello, America, and those listening around the world. We turn the page on another year, and hopefully we're turning the corner on what has been a disaster-filled decade. We have endured 9/11 and are continuing in the throes of a deep recession that has been exacerbated by the most useless, wasteful spending in our history. How did this happen? Desperate for hope and change, our country elected a neophyte president, the most ideological and least experienced in our history, and armed him with a bulletproof House and Senate. The result? We have put our children and grandchildren into debt. Millions of our people are unemployed. We have a health care bill looming over our heads that threatens our economy, the quality of future health care, the cost of health care, and the care and longevity of our senior citizens. Our stature in the world has been diminished to the point where our enemies no longer fear us and our allies no longer respect or trust us. Our country is overrun with illegal aliens who are receiving all kinds of costly services from us that we cannot afford to provide. Illegals are in every emergency room in the country, receiving medical care that we, the taxpayers, pay for, in the form of higher insurance premiums. They have babies, so we will make the babies citizens and give them support with checks from guess who? Yes, you're right. You, the taxpayers. Illegals are in our school systems, and the taxpayers pay for that. All the while, they continue to pour across our borders unabated. Our crime rate is driven up and our border states are ravaged by drug smugglers, while our security, safety, and economy are taking enormous hits. Our federal government stands by and does nothing about it for political reasons. The hope and change that the country wants has to be assured by the newly elected that are coming into the House and the Senate. Sunday morning on Meet the Press, Senator Lindsey Graham was interviewed by David Gregory. I consider Lindsey Graham, by his past actions, to be part of the arrogant establishment. The question is, did he get the message from this election, or is it the same old spin? I think he expects the newly elected to follow his lead, when it should be the other way around. Let's listen to a little of this.
The mandate of the last election was pretty clear to me, that the Democratic policies from 2008 to 2010 were rejected by the American people because they created too much debt and they grew the government too much. So if you want to reduce the size of government, I think you'll find a willing partner in the Republic.
He talks about the mandate being pretty clear to him, but he never listened to what the everyday folks were saying at town hall meetings and tea parties were saying with signs and speeches. Just as important as reducing spending is, just as important as reducing the debt is, just as important as reducing the size of government is, the people want representation. Graham thinks he was anointed to think for the people, so he never mentioned that. The people never wanted this health care bill, and they don't want any form of amnesty for illegals. But he never mentioned that subject either, because he disagrees with the American people. Let's hear what he had to say about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the mortgage crisis.
But what's the Republican solution to housing?
To me, is to get Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in a more privatized environment where risk reward is more traditionally accepted. That the American dream is to own a home you can afford, and to look at these entities and get more private sector involvement and control who they lend money to, and basically wind them down and make them more private.
He talks about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and he talks in complicated terms about let's control who they can lend to and how they can lend, and let's control this and control that, and at the same time, privatize. He doesn't understand like folks understood back in the day when they had something called good lending practices. It's not all that complicated. Get the government out of the business of trying to control what's going on with people who lend money for mortgages, and stop telling them how or who they should lend money to. Back in the day, we had something called good lending practices. People lent money to people that they felt were in a position to be able to comfortably pay it back. They were encouraged by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the House of Representatives and the Senate, through Chris Dodd, through Barney Frank, to lend money to people who they felt should be entitled to the American dream. The poor should be entitled to the American dream. And they left the bankers, the mortgage bankers, and the mortgage companies no choice but to go ahead and perform with bad lending practices, or they lose their business to the next fellow that did. They were encouraged to make these kinds of loans. Then they were all packaged up and shipped overseas and sold around the country and whatever. The result is, look where people are today. The most valuable thing that most people have is their home, and it's worth about half what it was, half what they counted on towards their retirement. People in their 60s will never see it back again before they're ready to retire, and they have their government to blame for that. So this fellow and the rest of the government's got to get a little simpler about it and turn these things back into the hands of the people that need to make a profit doing it.
Is there a chance for actual health care repeal, or do you see room for compromise? All this talk about the individual mandate making individuals buy insurance,
right?
You had talked about compromise on that early on. Do you disagree that it's unconstitutional? A lot of Republicans believe that.
I think the problem with the individual mandate is that everybody is going to be in a government-run plan. I was with 7 Republicans and 7 Democrats that required everybody to be covered. You did away with employer deductions, and you allowed individuals to buy health care in the private sector across state lines, and it was revenue neutral. I think you're going to see the fight on Obamacare across the board in the House and the Senate to try to defund the Obamacare bill and to start over. One thing I'm going to do with Senator Brasso is allow states to opt out of the individual mandate, the employer mandate, and expansion of Medicaid. The expansion of Medicaid under the Obama health care bill is going to bankrupt South Carolina. So I think this fight's going to continue to 2012, and it's going to move from Washington to the states. It will be one big fight over the role of health care, and should Obama health care be in existence in 2012 the way it is today.
Well, he says one thing he's going to do with Senator Brasso, something he did with 7 other senators. He's always talking about himself here, and this man needs to understand that we've just had a historic election. The American people have sent a clear message down there that they want this 2007-page health care bill repealed. They want it repealed. Now, there's no question that the House will pass a bill in January to repeal this. It'll be one of the first things they attend to. It's up to Senator Graham and the rest of his colleagues in the Senate to gather together enough votes to pass the House bill and send it down to President Obama's desk to either put up or shut up for the American people, to either allow the American people to have their way or to impose his way on us, and then we'll take that up again in 2012 and do whatever is necessary between now and then to minimize the damage to the American people from this disastrous bill.
Well, you've talked about the Tea Party influence, and you've been skeptical about whether Tea Party activists who become candidates, who become legislators now, are actually willing to compromise, actually willing to legislate. Where do you find yourself then? Closer to the Tea Party after the lame duck session, or closer to the moderate?
Well, I hope I'm enthusiastic about new people coming in, because God knows this Congress coming into being needs to learn from the mistakes of the past Congress. So Tea Party people can provide energy to do something about our spending problems by getting us back to 2008 spending levels. Pat Toomey's on your panel. He's been a real leader on entitlement reform. The Debt Commission is a bipartisan document that we all should look at about flattening our tax code, increasing the age eligibility for Medicare and Social Security. Upper income Americans should have their Social Security benefits means tested, simply because we don't have enough money to keep Social Security solvent without change. So I hope the Tea Party will come to Washington and change the whole dynamic that led to this fiscal mess we're in, starting with spending in the 2011 year, but also in reforming entitlements. And I think a guy like Pat Toomey will be a breath of fresh air for the next Congress.
It's interesting how David Gregory asks him about the Tea Party. He says, are you with the moderates or are you with the Tea Party? Well, I've got news for David Gregory and news for Lindsey Graham. Being with the Tea Party is being with the American people. The Tea Party is not a right-wing organization. It's not a left-wing organization. In fact, it's not an organization. It's the people. It's the plain, ordinary American people that have rose up to speak out against being ignored by their government, and rose up to speak out about their government passing laws that they didn't want, that they don't want. It's about being listened to. And it's interesting how Lindsey Graham says, well, I hope they'll bring in energy to do this, to do that, to help reduce the debt, to help with the spending, to listen to him, sort of. Everything seems to be, well, I've got the ideas, and I hope I get the backing for it. You know, he still, I think, looks at himself as a senior senator and a big brain trust down there in Washington. Well, he's vulnerable. He's vulnerable when he comes up for election. These people need to understand what the real message of this election is. It's listen to us. Hey, we're out here. We're the people that employ you. Let's go on and listen to what Lindsey Graham's answer was about raising the debt ceiling.
You talk about the budget, yeah. You talk about spending. How will you vote on the debt ceiling? Will you vote to raise it, which is a vote that will come up in relatively short order?
Right. Well, to not raise the debt ceiling could be a default of the United States on bond and treasury obligations. That would be very bad for the position of the United States in the world at large. But this is an opportunity to make sure the government is changing its spending ways. I will not vote for the debt ceiling increase until I see a plan in place that will deal with our long-term debt obligations, starting with Social Security, a real bipartisan effort to make sure that Social Security stays solvent, adjusting the age, looking at means tests for benefits. On the spending side, I'm not going to vote for a debt ceiling increase unless we go back to 2008 spending levels, cutting discretionary spending.
Well, did you hear the forked tongue? He started out by saying to not increase the debt ceiling would cause a default on our bonds. You'd have it, a reaction around the world from it. We couldn't do that. But then he goes on to say how he wants to see us make a commitment to reduce spending. He won't vote in favor of raising the debt ceiling unless we do this, unless we do the other thing. But he started out by saying you have to vote to raise the debt ceiling. So first he signals that at the end of the day, he's going to vote for it. But then he says, but I want to get on the record as asking for all of these reductions in spending. Well, you've got to do more than get on the record. You can't play poker by telling somebody you're going to drop out on the third card anyway. It doesn't work that way. But let's listen to what he has to say when David Gregory engages him about means testing and the retirement age.
That's a big condition, yeah, just on Social Security alone.
Yeah.
You think Republicans are prepared to follow you in two things you said, raise the retirement age and means test benefits for older Americans?
I would suggest that if we're serious about taking America in a new direction and you're not putting entitlement reform on the table, you've missed a great opportunity to change the course of America's future. And the last election was about change, change that really will make us something other than Greece. I think Pat Toomey, Rand Paul, and other candidates who are new to the Congress have said during the campaign, everything's on the table when it comes to making America fiscally sound. Let's see if we can find bipartisan reforms in Social Security before we raise the debt limit.
But do you think Senator McConnell, the leader of the Republicans, is going to go along with that?
I hope so. I know that Speaker Boehner is going to produce spending limitation bills every day. But the question for the Republican Party, for the Tea Party, for the Democratic Party, beyond discretionary spending, are we willing to look at the Debt Commission's suggestions in entitlement reform and begin to enact those reforms before it's too late? I hope that this new Congress will do something the other Congresses have never done, and that is seriously look at entitlement reform by adjusting the age and means testing benefits, including Medicare Part D. Obama health care needs to be repealed and replaced, but the Republican Party created Medicare Part D, a prescription drug entitlement that's already gotten out of control. I hope we'll put that on the table for reform.
Would you vote to actually scrap that, to take it away?
I would vote to means test it. I would vote to make sure that people in my income level and your income level don't get their prescription drug bills paid by the federal government because we can't afford it. I would vote to make sure that someone in my income level would have their Social Security benefits renegotiated if they're under 55, not in a draconian way, but changes that we can make now for people 55 and under to avoid a fiscal collapse that's surely coming if we do nothing. The president said in his speech he wants to work with us. This is a good opportunity to find common ground, entitlement reform starting with Social Security.
All right. Did you ever hear such a hypocrite? A hypocrite like that in your life? He says to David Gregory, people of your income bracket and people in my income bracket, we ought to be means tested. He includes himself. He doesn't get Social Security. He doesn't come under the same health care bill that we do. He's exempted from the whole mess and has something special as a senator. As a United States senator, this guy is making $174,000 a year. No one in the private sector making $174,000 a year can provide themselves with the kind of retirement that this man is going to enjoy when he retires for the rest of his life. And then I believe his wife will continue to enjoy if she succeeds him. And he has got the gall, the absolute unmitigated gall, to go on national TV and say, people of your income and my income, we should be means tested. What does he mean by we? He's not we. He's not one of us, but he damn sure ought to be. Stay with me. I'll be right back after a short break.
This is the Jerry Abrams Show.
How do you choose the right affiliate network to partner with? The answer is simple. MarketHealth.com, where health and wealth connect. Established in 1998, the MarketHealth.com affiliate network allows you to market and promote the world's leading health and beauty offers on the net. Start making recurring income and the highest payouts in our industry. Choose from over 50 of the hottest selling offers, ranging from herbal supplements, skincare, vitamins, beauty products, weight loss, and much more. Sign up for free at MarketHealth.com and start making money today.
If you're looking for a new multifaceted SEO and social media toolset, look for the Raven. Raven has the important tools that every internet marketer needs. Raven offers customized metrics for managing link building campaigns, social media campaigns, with campaign reporting and research tools that you can easily manage. Build up campaign performance for your clients and give your team the tools that will make them soar. If you want to increase your internet marketing revenue, look for the Raven. Go to RavenTools.com. That's RavenTools.com.
What is this? Why is my website not ranking higher?
Well, sounds like you could use a link building report from SEOFox.com.
What's that?
You can't rank without good backlinks. And SEOFox.com's link building report lets you enter domains and compare their backlinks. It gives a detailed report that shows you why each domain ranks where it does, and it reduces the time it takes to find more links. With SEOFox.com's link building report, you can find more links, use their search marketing services to find more links, or better yet, they could even build your own backlinks.
So you think you're pretty sly with that SEO Fox link building report?
Sly like a fox.
Get your link building report today at SEOFox.com. That's SEOFox.com.
State of Search, your home for the latest search marketing news and views of the world. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the International Marketing Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
For some more talk with some common sense. This is the Jerry Abrams Show.
Just as a point of interest, the 110th Congress, which sat the year before last, Democrat-controlled Congress, spent $3.22 trillion. That's more than the first 100 Congresses sitting in session spent combined. The first 100 Congresses of the United States combined never spent that amount of money. That's remarkable, truly. Many times on this program, I refer to our founding fathers and how we should follow what our founding fathers set out for us. And I think it's worth taking a few minutes to talk about just what kind of people these founding fathers were. And I'd like to hold Thomas Jefferson up as a good example. Thomas Jefferson began his education very early in life. He started by studying under his cousin as a tutor. At age nine, he studied Latin, Greek, and French. At 14, he studied classical literature and additional languages. When he was 16, he entered the College of William and Mary. At 19, he studied law for 5 years, starting under George Wythe. When he was 23, he started his own law practice. At age 25, he was elected to the Virginia House of Burgesses. At 31, he wrote the widely circulated Summary View of the Rights of British America and retired from his law practice. When he turned 32, he was a delegate to the Second Continental Congress. Now, at 33, he wrote the Declaration of Independence, just a little document like that, 33 years old. Also at 33, he took 3 years to revise Virginia's legal code and wrote a public education bill and a statute for religious freedom. At 36, he was elected the second governor of Virginia, succeeding Patrick Henry. At 40, he served in the Congress for 2 years. At 41, he was the American minister to France and negotiated commercial treaties with European nations, along with Ben Franklin and John Adams. When he was 46, he served as first Secretary of State under George Washington. At 53, he served as vice president and was elected president of the American Philosophical Society. At 55, drafted the Kentucky resolutions and became active head of the Republican Party. At 57, he was elected the third president of the United States. At 60, he obtained the Louisiana Purchase, doubling the nation's size, and at 61, was elected to a second term as president. When he turned 65, he retired to Monticello. At age 80, he helped President Monroe shape the Monroe Doctrine. And at 81, almost single-handedly, created the University of Virginia and served as its first president. At 83, he died on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, along with John Adams, on the 4th of July. Thomas Jefferson knew because he himself studied the previous failed attempts at government. He understood actual history, the nature of God, his laws, and the nature of man. That happens to be more than what most understand today. Jefferson really knew his stuff, a voice from the past to lead us into the future. John F. Kennedy held a dinner in the White House for a group of the brightest minds in the nation at that time. He made this statement: "This is perhaps the assembly of the most intelligence ever to gather at one time in the White House, with the exception of when Thomas Jefferson dined alone." Jefferson had an awful lot of famous quotes, but it's worth noting a few. He said, "When we get piled upon one another in large cities, as in Europe, we shall become as corrupt as Europe. The democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give to those who would not." He said, "It's incumbent for every generation to pay its own debts as it goes, a principle which, if acted on, would save one half the wars of the world." Jefferson said, "I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them." Does any of this ring familiar? My reading of history convinces me that most bad government results from too much government. No free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny in government. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. To compel a man to subsidize with his taxes the propagation of ideas which he disbelieves and abhors is sinful and tyrannical. Jefferson said in 1802, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered." Well, that gives us a little insight to one of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, and how can we not say that his wisdom does not apply to us today, or that the document that he wrote does not apply to us today? Well, that's going to do it for me until next week. Join us next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 p.m. Pacific for our next show. If you missed any of our episodes, you can find the archives of our past shows by going to webmasterradio.fm or on iTunes. And as long as they'll still allow me to say it, God bless you and God bless America.